Welcome back to another edition of Summer is Coming. I'm your host, Tiny Grimes, and I'm joined today by a new co-host.
No, you're joined by the illustrious Dark Nodge.
Oh, I forgot you were illustrious. That's my bad. All right, yeah. Dark Nodge, there was a new chapter pack, A Turn of the Tide, and as usual, we're the last to review the pack. What do you think of the pack generally?
It's got a lot of interesting cards in it. Like, a couple of them really jump out to me. So, overall, I have a really good feeling about the pack. How about yourself?
I kind of had the opposite feeling. There's two cards that I really like in the pack, and the rest of it feels kind of blah to me. Like, there's some decent situational cards, but there's just not many of those ultra-efficient, these are going in lots of deck cards. It feels more like cards you would like. Like, oh, I have this oddball deck that no one's tried because it's terrible and this card fits in it and makes it less terrible.
You're right, actually. There's a lot of those types of cards and I'm in love with them in this deck.
Yeah, it definitely like, feels more
sitting
like
the Iron Throne.
Pack.
Oh my god, it's so good.
What is so good?
Sitting the Iron Throne.
Yeah, now that's one that I like a lot. It's not in those two ultra efficient cards, but that seems like a combo card that's going to do well. So let's talk about that.
First of all, you know, if you wanted, you could just do literally a Lannister dominant deck right now. Hold off the enemy and gain 3 power a turn. Wow, that's cool from a Shaggy perspective. But this card being a small council event lets you do so many cool things with it. You know, you can use the Joffrey that says, you know, kneel a noble character after a player plays a small council effect. Well, this is going to put the power on a character because it doesn't say your character. It just says a character. You can put it on your opponent's character, use that Joffrey to discard them. You can, you know, combo it great out of Lannister with things like Lion's Gate where you discard power to do trait manipulation. So it opens up all these interesting little combinations in Lannister as well as gives you a very quick power grab. That's why I love it.
Yeah, I agree. It's the only thing that holds me back even a little is the text that says you put the power on a character. And so that's, you know, it combos great with Joffrey, but it combos less good with just like every turn using it as a power grabbing source. The way this game works is characters usually die, though they seem to be dying a little bit less now than they used to be.
Yeah, there's less murder decks out there, so because of that, your characters are a little bit more safe. But, you know, there's lots of ways to keep that power safe. You can easily, if you wanted, you could focus it on, like, the Joffrey that can't be the target of anything, immune to all triggered effects.
Have you heard of Valor?
I have heard of Valor, yeah.
Yeah. Pretty
there's
good.
Other ways to protect him, though, too, because you could put, like, Noble Crest on him, protect him, miss the Valor, and then he's basically invincible after that. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, I've been finding more and more that with less attachment control, it's just safer to run stuff like bodyguards, especially since search and detain is now restricted. You can more easily put out Cersei early, dupe her, put some attachments on her, and feel like she's actually going to live for a while.
Yeah, pretty well protected unless you're playing a burn deck or something. And yeah. Even then, the attachments can help you.
Yeah, so because of that, I'm starting to feel a little bit better about this card, and it feels like it's great in a couple decks. Like, if you're playing a rush deck, all you got to do is get to 9. Oh, sorry, not to 9. All you got to do is get to 12 or, say, 11. Then you're going to win dominance, pick up 3 with this card, and boom, you win. That's a little bit tough with a rush deck because you need the gold and the gold to pay for guys. So I'm thinking this is maybe turn 2. Turn 1, you put out Cersei, put some stuff on her, put out a couple other guys. Turn 2, you save back your gold, and you just try to win with this.
Yeah, and I mean, Lannister already had some great, you know, we win dominance with lots of gold-type cards. Like, they had the Tyrion that, you know, if you had four gold when you won Dom, he got the power. So it's really cool to see that theme, you know, strengthen out of this pack.
Yeah.
So I really like that card.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it fits in great with the straight-up dominance theme. The difference being, though, in that deck, you definitely know it's coming, right? You're like, okay, they got Tywin out. They want to win dominance and grab power, and so they'll try a little harder not to. I feel like this card is a little bit more of a surprise card. I mean, if I see my Lannister opponent with a full hand of cards, a half-empty board, and 4 gold, I'm thinking they're probably having this in hand. But still, it's nice to have it as a surprise.
It's even if they know you have it, it's sometimes very hard to prevent someone that's making all this gold from winning dominance.
Yeah, definitely. Especially if they have people like Cersei not kneeling, Jaime standing up at the beginning of dominance. It becomes a lot easier, I think, with Lannister to win dominance.
Right, and if they have any kneel at all, they're kneeling down your big characters, so.
Exactly. You know what card I just love out of this pack, Darknosh?
Dale Seaworthy.
Okay, we can go with Dale Seaworth, because he's the other guy I love. So we'll go with Dale Seaworth. Dale Seaworth is pretty darn good, isn't he?
He is fantastic, and he's shaggy.
The problem is, I would give him a D, because he only has 2 health and Venomous Blade kills him.
And how often do you see that these days?
Oh, all the time. Everyone runs it over. The Bannerman, Burning on the Sands, Savas. Oh, wait, no one runs it.
Yeah, so I think he's pretty safe.
Yep, I'm going to have to agree with that one. And you know what? Even if they do Venomous Blade him, you go into your discard pile and you get a Baratheon card.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he dies. That's great. I'm just going to use my event here, bring him back to life, get to draw another card. He actually brings a point to some of these Bera cards where it's like, switch Bera characters in play. I'm like, awesome. So now I can switch a Bera character in play. And for doing this, I'm going to grab 2 cards. I'm liking it.
Yeah, that sounds pretty darn good.
Like Bound by Blood, which says, you know, challenges, return 1 Baratheon character to your hand, cannot be saved, put another Baratheon character with the same cost into play. So this lets you cycle Dale very easily and, you know, bring other cards back to hand, because you'll get 1 when you played him, 1 when he comes back, and then you're going to get another 1 when you play him again. So that's kind of sexy.
Yeah, what I like about him is I feel like he gets around the draw problem with Baratheon. If he dies, you can bring him back with Fiery Kiss. When you bring him back, he brings a card back. You let him die during the challenges phase. You bring another card back. Who needs draw when you can cycle through your whole discard pile with Dale Seaworth?
Yeah, and there's so many ways to make yourself discard these days. So, I mean, you can easily get cards into your discard pile, and then you can use Dale over and over if you want to. You can include a plot or two to help the cycle, or you could go crazy and maybe include the Brotherhood location that returns a Brotherhood to your hand, and then you just have to do a little bit of trait manipulation on Dale, and all of a sudden he's jumping back and forth.
Oh, Darknosh, you and your brilliant Shaga mind. I actually kind of like that. Yep, so bottom line is, it seems like Dale Seaworth alone opens up pretty much a whole new, well, I shouldn't say a whole new Bera archetype, but we'll say it resurrects an old Bera archetype.
Yeah, it really does strengthen that Bera recursion theme that we saw at the beginning of these packs with the plot. So if that wasn't your favorite character, I'm going to have to say that it's got to be the new Tyrell.
No, of course not. It is, looking, it's Raiders of, no, yeah, it's, Marjorie Tyrell, of course. I'd say Dale is actually my favorite, and she is my close second favorite. But she is really amazing.
She is so good.
Giving someone lure sounds maybe, it's not that great. It is that great. Especially if you go first, let's say your opponent has their cavalry flank out, they were planning to just wreck you with. They have 2 claim. They have 3 epic battles. You play her, you lure him into an intrigue challenge where he has no icons, and you win the challenge, and he's knelt.
Yeah, you get a poison knife on her or something, and she's got deadly, and she starts killing people all over the place.
Yeah, it's fantastic. That's, by the way, that's my secret combo there, Darknosh. What are you doing telling the world?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure no one figured that one out, Tiny.
Yeah, and here's the really secret combo. You play the Alliance plot, and you play the Fighting Pit, like everyone else is doing.
Like, yeah, 10 million people.
So it's that a you secret, can... Darknosh. Don't tell the one person who doesn't know yet.
Yeah, so you can multi-user. Crazy.
Yeah, she
seems... And then kill 2 characters around.
She seems really, really good. I have a hard time not putting her in every single Lannister and Baratheon deck.
Yeah, honestly, I can't see her not going in a Lannister or Baratheon deck. At least one of. Like,
exactly.
I would normally do 2, I think, even, but definitely 1.
Yeah, I have a Baratheon deck that I've built. It's not at all built around her. It's just a regular power-grabbing Baratheon deck. And, you know, I bought the pack and said, yeah, sure, I'll slide her in. Sure enough, one game, she was just absolutely critical. It was like, okay, you've got a Harmon Uller out. Looks like you might be able to win this turn. No, I don't think so. I think Harmon Uller is going to kneel to block an intrigue challenge. Good luck with that.
Yeah. And here's the other great thing. She adds a little bit more control to Baratheon. And, you know, everyone thinks of Baratheon as this rush deck. Baratheon does have a bunch of control elements. It just doesn't have enough to be like a super strong control house yet. It's really close, I think, with, you know, Dale being able to recur stuff, with the new Tyrell. You know, we start looking at some of the Ashai that kneel people when they kneel without intrigue icons. We got Black Cells. They're getting pretty close to having enough pieces to be competitive in control, I think.
Wow. That would be really interesting if, at like, for Worlds, the top control house is Baratheon.
They got some great control events. You know, everyone's like, oh, what do they have? Well, Terminal Schemes can be run out of Baratheon. It's a nice direct kill. They can always do Seductive Promise. It's been one of their staples forever. So they have some nice control events that they can use. And they're starting to get enough control characters. I wouldn't be surprised that in, you know, 6 months from now, you could see some very strong Baratheon control builds.
Yeah. I'm going to say something now that everyone's going to think is insane coming from me. I think Baratheon might be the top house right now. I mean, it might still be Targ, but I think Baratheon is real close to being the top.
Wow. And yeah. You think that's something from the new chapter packs, or do you think Baratheon always had this strength that people just underestimated it?
To me, it's a combination of the new chapter packs and the FAQ. Having less icon control and less Martell in the meta is making Baratheon better. And then you get guys like Dale Seaworth, Melisandre's Schemes, the Great Sept. You have all these ways around the draw problem. So if Baratheon can say, I don't care about my draw problem, well, that was the whole problem they had, right? They would rush, you would Valor, and then they would be dead. Whereas now they can rush, you Valor, they can have all these duplicates and protections on their card because they're not getting removed as much, so they survive the Valor better, and they refill their hand better. I just think that they are quickly coming to the top, if not the top.
Yeah, I'm really finding the negotiations at the Great Sept and the Long Voyage has really started to push a lot of decks towards big characters, dropping a lot of characters on the board, more of this character-centric rather than control-centric environment. And the negotiations itself, it's got to get restricted, I think. It's too good. What do you think, Tiny?
The second I saw it, I said that. I mean, you get to redraw five cards right there. That needs to be restricted. Oh, it has two claim also. Wow, that's pretty
interesting. Yeah. The more I play with it and against it, the more I think when I play it, I think, wow, this is overpowered. And when I play against it, I think, wow, this is overpowered. And to me, when you play with it and your opponent's the one getting hosed and you're thinking to yourself, wow, this is overpowered, it's overpowered.
Yeah. That's for sure.
Something's got to be done. It's got to be fixed. What do you think of the Long Voyage, balance-wise?
Oh, I don't know what to think of the Long Voyage. I still think it's awful. I mean, let me rephrase that. I'll back up and say, I think the card pool has matured to a point where there's enough redundancy in the card pool that the Long Voyage is a reasonable choice. And especially in aggro decks that aren't that concerned about what the card is they're putting out. They just want to put out a bunch of big cards. For instance, Chris's Long Voyage deck that we talked about last week. It's great for that. I personally don't like it. I don't like the feeling of, well, I'm just drawing random cards. Like I just want to have more control over my deck.
But you're not really.
Maybe I'm just wrong.
You're just not drawing more. You're not drawing random cards. Because you're drawing that extra card, you have the same chance to pick up that three of that you had in your other deck that you have in the Long Voyage. Your percentages don't change. You just get more cards.
All right,
so if you were looking for a specific card like, I don't know, the Laughing Storm, you had. Now, your setup might be different. You might not have as much chance to set him up or have him your original hand. But after that, you'd have the same chance to draw him as in another deck. Plus, you're getting these extra cards. So to me, it's all advantage, no disadvantage, because the card pool is so mature. If that agenda came out a year and a half ago, maybe even a year ago, I'd say, ooh, okay, now we're going to have to include so many non-top tier type cards to fill up the deck. It's not worth it. But today's meta, it is really strong.
I feel like one of the big places where the card pool is not quite mature is in resource locations. Like, for instance, in my Baratheon deck, I'm already using all of the good resource locations. So if I jumped up to an 85-card deck to round out the proper curve, I would have to be putting in, I don't know, a bunch of fiefdoms and locations that I'm just not that happy playing with. And as soon as I start adding cards I'm not happy with, that's when I start saying, I don't really want to do this.
I don't have too much trouble finding 18 decent location reducers in the current card pool. There's so many of these zero cost, you know, streets and stuff now. Yeah, I guess it really depends on how many locations you need for the deck and what type of deck it is. But in general, I find that you can build pretty tight 85 card decks. Now I say this, but I don't plan on playing one anytime soon. Mostly because I do find it a simpler deck to play. I don't think you need to think as much. You're just kind of drawing cards and slopping big creatures down normally.
Yeah.
Which can be a bonus because it means that, you know, you won't have to think as hard on, you know, your seventh or eighth game of the day. But that's not the type of game I like to play.
Yeah, I'm really torn. So I have a Baratheon deck right now and I'm not entirely satisfied with it. I'm still working on it. And it's a 60-card deck. And I keep thinking to myself, oh, should I make this a long voyage deck? I mean, I have all the cards I want. I've got, you know, my three Bobs. I've got my three Mels. I've got my Renly. I've got Maria. I've got my Knight of Flowers. I've got Dale. I'm looping stuff. Like, I could put 25 more cards in it and not be completely dissatisfied with my choices. They'd be a lot more meta cards than I'm able to fit in it right now. But I just feel like I already have all the good stuff. And so by expanding to 85, I'm really just diluting the deck at that point to get more draw. And if I already have stuff like the Great Sept, Melisandre's Schemes, Dale Seaworth, all these ways to just generate fake draw, maybe that's worth it.
Maybe if you're trying to be really, really tight, like if you're really worried about setups and making sure that you're going to set up one of these cards or that it's going to be in your opening hand. But if it's just like, I need to draw good cards, I think you're better going with a long voyage.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to put that pressure on immediately turn one. Just like, I have Bob, I have a Seat of Power, and I have a Narrow Sea, and I have a one-cost weenie out on the flop. Then I draw up into my hand, and I draw into Stannis or Melisandre. Like, the odds are just much better of that happening in a 60-card deck and just putting that immense pressure immediately on your opponent. Now, having said that, Bruno is able to do that every single game with a Long Voyage deck. So perhaps, you know, it is a totally legitimate approach. I'm just having a hard time with the math and my experience to commit to it fully.
Right. So what are some of the least favorite cards you have in this pack?
My least favorite card, or probably just hyperbolically my least favorite card, and it's only because everyone else loves it, is King's Landing Coup.
Who would love that card?
Everyone seems to love this card but me, so apparently I'm crazy. But it's a 4/8/1, which sounds great, and it's a power struggle, which is great, but it's a city plot, which some people have thought is great. But the text is, if you have no other city plots in your used pile, then you can reveal the top card of your deck and add it to your hand every time you win a challenge as the defender. So my thought is I'd be playing this card to make it have text over At the Gates, Manning the City Walls, or the Great Sept. I have a very hard time finding any deck in which I'm going to use city plots in which I would use this over the other ones. So at that point, that means I'm just using this as a placeholder for a city plot deck because it's a 4/8/1. And I've just gotten to a point in my plot choices where a 4/8/1 with no text is just useless to me.
Yeah, I'm not. I really don't like the plot, though. To me, I mislike Seized more than I mislike that plot. I look at Seized and I say, okay, I got this Greyjoy attachment for 2 gold that I can't attach to non-limited locations. I can't attach to unique locations or limited locations. So what does that leave me? It leaves me maybe a half dozen locations I might want to steal if I'm playing against mostly Lannister. So what does it do for me the rest of the time?
Yeah.
Not much.
I mean, it's a really interesting card. I definitely agree with what you're saying. There are a whole slew of locations you can take with it. The question is, are they really that good? Like Smuggler's Cove, Golden Tooth Mines, things like that.
They're good. I mean, but you have to hope that they draw one of those three. And you have to be hopeful. Like, if you're playing Stark, what are you stealing?
I guess you're stealing Frozen Outpost. I would definitely not run this in just like, hey, I'm running a Greyjoy deck. I'm going to put Seized in there. What I'm wondering is if it works in a choke deck. And that it's just one more way, especially if you're running the Long Voyage, to get that redundancy in there to be able to take away some of their resources.
I don't know, because I don't see it affecting a lot of resource cards. Because a lot of them are limited. Like, maybe you're stealing a street with it or something.
Right, that's what my thought would be. If you're trying to choke somebody, you're already choking their gold, so the way to get around it is with streets, and this is a way to take the streets. Now, admittedly, it costs you 2 to do it, so I don't see myself running it very often, but perhaps in a Long Voyage deck. But I'm going to have to agree with you. I think it's way overcosted.
Yeah. If it was 1, I could see I would play it, maybe. Or if it didn't have one of the 2 restrictions, if it just said, you know, non-unique.
Right.
Or if it just said, you know, non-limited, then I would definitely run it. It'd be awesome.
Yeah, then it would be way over the curve.
So out of the rest of the pack, I'm not super excited about anything, but I think those, you know, 4 or 5 cards we talked about are so good that it made me excited about the whole pack. But there is another cool Shaggy card in here.
All right, lay it on me.
Shores of the Summer Sea.
Yes,
so I agree. A lot of people have been talking about this card. They're saying, you know, if you don't know its response, after you lose a challenge, kneel Shores of the Summer Sea to choose 2 cards in your discard pile. Shuffle those cards back into your deck. People are talking about decking themselves and then using this basically to trigger selective draw. And, you know, people are saying, well, you get yourself, you know, Burning on the Sands, you get yourself a Red Vengeance, and you just kind of selectively draw those 2 cards over and over again to be able to basically shut down all challenges against you. You know, either they're paying the claim or the challenge is an auto loss. And then you just kind of play from there. Now, people are saying, you know, you do this in a block sales deck so that you can win some challenges, so that you could get your other cards through that draw effect. Or if you need to, you would cycle, you know, characters in from your discard, etc.
Yeah, I think that's a pie in the sky deck. I just think that's one of those cute Shaga decks that will just not be efficient enough to actually be good. What I think is going to be good is an archetype based around having a limited deck. Rather than, I'm down to 2, you don't deck yourself. You just play stuff like Arya Hota and other ways to discard cards to where you're down to, say, 20 cards. And you just, based on the matchup, make those 20 cards count. So like you're saying, keep looping your Red Vengeances and your Burning on the Sands and your Dupes of Viper, or if you're running a Westeros Bleeds deck, you're looping your Westeros Bleeds and you're drawing them more often rather than trying to set up your entire deck around this one little combo. Like, I always think those decks are the decks that fall apart. If it's a piece of your deck, I think it could be a really interesting deck.
Yeah, I agree. If you try to do a single combo in your deck, I mean, I've done it. I love it. But at the same time, you are, you know, putting all your eggs in one basket. It's a great deck until the newly made Lord discards the sea or something, right? And then you're like, no, my Shores of the Summer Sea. My deck's done. Right. I've decked myself, right? Like, so it's got its bonuses, but it's definitely a card that I think has some Shaga potential. I had to mention it.
Yeah, I actually think it's going to spawn a new archetype. You know, like we have the Westeros Bleeds archetype, and that seems to be the top Martell deck right now. And I think there's a decent chance this card could go, like, along with that archetype, especially since you have Princess Plans, Other ways to discard your deck to where you can get some of it back with Princess Plans into your hand, and then, you know, you're able to... So for instance, let's say you have the top four cards of your deck are two junk cards, and then Westeros Bleeds and Red Vengeance are two down too far. You can use the Shores to put back in your deck the cards you don't want, so you can play Prince's Plans to grab the four you do want into your hand. Things like that, I think, are going to be really strong.
Yeah. And I just need to talk about one last card that I'm really done. And that's the Braided Screamers. What do you think of this card, Tiny? I'll read it to you while you're thinking. If you're running a character agenda or are not running an agenda, Braided Screamers gain response. After you play a Dothraki character of cost 3 or more, search the top 5 cards of your deck for a Dothraki character, reveal it, and add it to your hand, then shuffle your deck.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good. I mean, if you think a Dothraki deck is good, it'll be good. I'm personally not a fan of Dothraki decks, but it does have a Warcrest. You can build a Warcrest deck with tricks. Anytime you can reveal cards and put them in your hand, it's a good card.
Yeah, and there's no cap here, right? Like, you could play one of these, you could get one of those big 6-cost armies, plop them down for free, go get another card, and you can just get a lot of fake draw out of these guys.
Oh, yeah, since they're not unique, you can just do 3 of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're pretty decent, and I think Dothraki are really close to being able to run a pretty nice no-agenda deck. If there's any more support for the Dothraki in the next couple chapter packs, I think they'll be very viable.
All right. Sounds good. All right, so Dark Knowledge, it looks like we have an army for each house, which we've been seeing a lot of recently. Do you like any of these armies? We already talked about the Baratheon one a little bit, but are any of the other ones interesting to you?
Okay, so we did talk about... the Screamers already, and I quite like this card. I think, you know, like I said before, a few more Dothraki, and we're going to have a very solid Dothraki Warcrest theme. I also like the Stark army. You know, after you win a military challenge, reveal the top card of your deck. If it's a character, add it to your hand. Otherwise, return it to the top of your deck. I think, in general, Stark's running more than 50% of their deck characters, so this is easily going to let you get, you know, a character one out of every 2 times, I would say, at least. You know, they're all 4 cost for 5 strength, which is nice, and they got the Warcrest. Decent cards overall.
Yeah, I really like this guy a lot, especially if you're going to run the Kindly Man and you're going to do Mage Mormont, you're going to do tricks like that. The only problem, of course, is why aren't you just running the Long Voyage?
The same kind of issue with everything, right? Except that here you kind of need that no agenda.
Right, but my point seems to be, like, if you're just going to put in big characters because they're big characters, at that point it seems like the Long Voyage is the way to go. That way when your big characters get nuked, you're just drawing more big characters.
Yeah, I think that type of argument could be done with any type of heavy aggro deck. Now, the Long Voyage, for those types of decks, I think is maybe even overpowered. I personally think the Long Voyage is a vanilla card that's really, really good that, to me, is making the meta less interesting, because the decks that you tend to make out of the Long Voyage, in general, the ones that I've seen, are less interesting. They're generic themes, drop more characters than my opponent. If he Valors, I have more characters because I have draw, and that's it. And I also feel like those decks are really, really easy to play, so that it takes away some of the, you know, skilled player versus skilled player. And, yeah, so let's pretend the Long Voyage isn't around. How about that, Tiny?
Oh, okay, so we're going to live in fantasy land.
Yeah, I like it there. It's happier.
Can we add cards to fantasy land, or do they have to be existing cards?
Got to be existing cards.
Oh, okay.
In this case, I like the riders.
Yeah, I actually do, too. I think we're seeing more and more FFG push towards no agenda, and I feel like this is a card that really works well in a no agenda deck. I'm not saying no agenda is the best choice right now for Stark, but if you're going to run it, I think he's a must include and works quite well in it.
I don't like the Greyjoy one. Discarding cards, I'm just not excited about. And I don't like the Martell one that much, because I just don't think there's enough events compared to characters. It's like they got a weaker version of the Stark one.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Like, if you're going to run Westeros Bleeds deck or something like that where you're looping your events, I could in theory see him being good. But if you're going to do that, I've only seen one person try to do it without Knights of the Hollow Hill. And frankly, I thought that was insane. Why would you pass on Knights of the Hollow Hill if you're going to do a Prince's Plans Westeros Bleeds deck?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so I would have to agree. Both of those are unimpressive. Unless you're looking for simply armies and war crests. I mean, in that case, yeah, all these guys are great.
Yeah. So that's basically my thoughts on the pack overall. Is there any other cards that you want to talk about, Tiny?
Yeah. Shores of the Blackwater, the new Baratheon location, zero cost. If you win a challenge by four or more, kneel and discard it. To choose a character in your dead pile, kill this phase, return that character to your hand. I've seen people talk about how great this card is, and this card to me seems like utter and complete garbage. What do you think?
I'm going to be somewhere between the great and utter complete garbage. I think the card's okay.
Well, that's a profound analysis there.
I know. Well, what do you want me to say? Why do you think it's garbage?
The reason I think it's garbage is because it's only challenges. When you would really want a card like this, some sort of anti-Valor card, you know, there it would be really great. It sits there, they Valor, at least you get one of your guys back. It's almost like having an Iron Mines.
I was about to say there's already a card called Iron Mines that
does that. Yeah, exactly. instead, this is basically a card that's taking a card slot, and in Baratheon, there are a lot of good locations. You know, when I look at my Baratheon decks, I think, okay, there's actually more locations I want to put in that I can't. So this would be taking the place of one of those. And basically what you're saying is, if you happen to play a Die by the Sword on a guy I really want with no dupe, I have protection. That's basically what it's saying. Because you're not going to lose him to claim. So it's basically just a, oh, something weird happened. Now I put this card in my deck just in case something weird happens.
I could see some use with it. I mean, it's good for setup, zero cost, non-limited. That's great. You know, maybe you first snowed and you had a bunch of three-costers out because you're Baratheon, and this is something Baratheon does normally, and you lose someone that, you know, he's not a major part of your strategy, but you like to have him back. You could use this to bring him back. So in those types of decks, I think there's a place for it. Whether it's amazing or not, I think that'll be, we'll have to wait to see.
See, my problem is Fiery Kiss just seems better to me. Why wouldn't you just be playing Fiery Kiss instead of this?
Because Fiery Kiss, after this turn, Fiery Kiss goes away and the character goes out of play.
Right? It doesn't go out of your play, it goes to your discard pile,
okay, it goes
which
to your
then
discard
gets
pile.
Replayed with Melisandre's Schemes or goes back into your hand with Dale Seaworth.
Maybe. I mean, you're saying, like, you know, if you're returning that card with Dale Seaworth, you could have returned a different card with him. So you're giving up, you know, potential, future potential. Melisandre's Scheme can be Forgotten Plans. You only have so many resources. I think if you can get cards coming back for free without having to worry about it, without having to use Dale or Melisandre, that just means you're going to get to use those cards on other cards in your discard.
I agree, but my point is those cards are already going in the deck because they're synergizing. You don't have to add more locations to accomplish something you're already accomplishing within the deck you have.
Yeah, I don't quite buy that because you're accomplishing something, yes. But if you wanted to focus on like a non-dying Baratheon deck, this would be a card you'd put in there.
I suppose I could see that. If you're really trying to focus on nobody's dying, stuff's going back to hand. I guess I should rephrase that. If I'm playing a Long Voyage deck, maybe it fits in there, and I need to start thinking a little bit more about referencing cards with the Long Voyage in mind. For me, in a 60-card deck, it just absolutely does not fit. Perhaps in an 85-card deck, there is a slot for it, just because there's enough, there's, you know, maybe 5 to 8 meta slots, and this could be one of them.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're going to see more and more Long Voyage because it is so strong. And, you know, I'm actually doing a regional tomorrow, and I am just extremely worried about Long Voyage's decks. I'll be taking some generic, normal, more normal type decks. You know, I'm going to probably take either a Targ-Summer, a Greyjoy Maester, or a Barrow Wildling to the tournament. I haven't decided which of the three yet, but I live in fear of Long Voyage decks. They're just so easy to play, and they're so rugged.
So anyways, are you predicting a loss for yourself?
No, I wouldn't be going with a deck that I didn't think had a chance against any Long Voyage deck. I just think that it's, you know, a much closer chance, a 50-50 matchup, which I don't like. I don't like 50-50 matchups, yeah, especially when I can't outplay the person that I have the 50-50 matchup with, because I don't feel like, you know, there's a lot of mistakes my opponent can make with a Long Voyage deck. Put characters down, as many as I can afford. Next round, do the same, attack with them.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely how it felt at the regional I went to a couple of weeks ago. It was, you know, the Long Voyage decks were just hard to handle for burn. They put out a bunch of characters, you burn them, they just put out some more. You know, you don't really have to worry about over-deploying to the board like you usually do. You know, the cards just come back magically.
Yeah, and it's not just the Long Voyage that, you know, I'm probably overemphasizing. It's the Long Voyage plus negotiations at the Great Sept that caused the problem for me. You know, plus, that extra five cards, just, oh.
Plus Melisandre's Schemes if you're playing against Baratheon.
Correct, yeah. Now, the burn deck that I'm, if I decide to play the Summer Burn deck, it doesn't have a lot of discard effects. It's mostly kill, so I'm less worried about the Melisandre's Schemes.
I guess, but if I would assume you'll see Fiery Kiss to move those guys over.
Yeah, it's very possible.
All right, well, I think that wraps up our take on this chapter pack. It seems like we both feel like it's kind of, it's got a couple of really good cards at the top. The rest of it is interesting, maybe fits into some decks, but not a lot of these ultra-efficient auto-includes.
And I think that's good. I don't want to see a lot of ultra-efficient auto-includes. I'd actually like to see a lot of middle ground cards that people can use in interesting ways and have different deck ideas. And in my mind, the meta's at, you know, one of the best places it's ever been, except I think I'm going to whine a little bit, except for the Long Voyage. I really feel that card, I don't know, it seems to make the meta more vanilla. Have you heard the news?
What's the news?
Octagon's getting a ladder.
Ah, yes, I had heard that. Do we know when the implementation is going to be, or how it's going to work?
I hear it's going to be in the next couple months. There's first going to be an update that is going to start tracking all the stats for every game, so people are going to start to be able to see, you know, what agenda plus house is beating what other agenda plus house out of all the games on Octagon. And then shortly after that, about a month after or a few months after, I'm putting a little bit of pressure on the developer now, we'll have a release where it's going to be, basically, you're going to get a rank, and it's going to say how many games you win, lose, and where you are in the global overall rank. And I believe after that, shortly after that, it's going to have a Find Me a Game button, where you will press it, and you will wait for someone of equivalent rank, or around the same rank, to play. Which is pretty exciting, in my opinion.
Is this going to be done through Octagon itself, or through the Game of Thrones plugin?
I believe it's going to be a little bit of each. I think there's even a tab in the current Octagon that is disabled that we can see that says, Find Me a Game.
Interesting. That says matchmaking.
Yeah, matchmaking. That would be it.
Yeah, that'll be very interesting. It's going to be funny to see these stats because there's so many random games that get played on Octagon, whether they be people who have no idea how to play the game, whether they be people who are like, hey, I got this experimental deck, and someone else is playing a tier one deck. It just feels like those stats are not really going to be that worthwhile.
I believe that there's going to be a pop-up that's going to say between the two players, do you want to play a ranked match? You can just play for fun whenever you want, but there's going to be this part that will say, like, in the matchmaking, whenever you use matchmaking, you always play ranked. If you want to just go to custom games, you can play unranked, but you can also make a custom game and it'll pop up and say, do you want to play a ranked match? If you say yes, only ranked game stats will be collected, is my understanding.
Ah, okay. That would be much better. It sounded like the way you were talking about the implementation, that the stats were coming first,
I think at first that's exactly what he's going to do. He's just going to collect stats on everything. And then he'll basically at some point clear it and then do the rest of it. And I think he's going to be collecting the stats because he needs to basically make sure that part of the code or that part of the program is working properly. We should probably actually try to get an interview with the person that's doing the plugin to get detailed information, because really all my information is secondhand, and I could be, you know, someone else could be misquoting this guy to me, and I'm telling, now I'm giving it to the world.
Oh, well, we expect nothing less from you. We're not real journalists anyways, right? We're just guys with a podcast.
It's true.
But that does sound very interesting, potentially exciting. I mean, if you could bring some sort of ranking system to Octagon, it will be helpful. I think the best players generally know who each other are, but there are a lot of Europeans who I see these random names late night, and I don't know if it's somebody good from Europe or someone who is new and is not really worth having a serious testing game against.
Yeah, that's the hardest part of Octagon is, you know, knowing which deck to play, especially if you only have time for one game. You know, you pick a tier one deck and you crush some poor new player. I don't want to do that to a new player. I want them to have a good time. I'd pick a fun deck and we could have a fun, good game. But I also don't want to pick a fun deck and then run into a European champion and get crushed because I was playing my fun, crazy deck.
Yeah, and it's really difficult to ask somebody online, hey, how good are you?
Yeah.
Because you get wild answers. You get some good players who are really humble and some new players who have no self-awareness.
Yeah, and so I think a ranking system will help a lot of that, which is great.
Yeah, I agree.
Since we're talking about smaller topics, Tony, what do you think of the announcement for the new set? This, you know, King's Road set, stepping back to the basics, basically.
I really like the idea of flushing out some of the older themes. Like, for instance, today, I was really looking at Compelled by the King, trying to make that card work. And it not only does it have good control, but it lets you stand people with banner attachments. And so I quickly did my doo-doo-doo-doo. Oh, the only one that I know of is the only card that exists that is a banner attachment. And it seems like flushing that out a little bit is going to be more interesting.
So there's five banner attachments, one for every house, right? One for each of the major houses.
Yes, I mean the only
in-house
one.
Right. Yeah. But you can easily play the other banner attachments in your deck from the other houses.
Not really, because you have to attach it to that kind of character.
Well, Baratheon has a bunch of characters that are both Lannister and Baratheon, or Baratheon and Stark. You could just hope to draw those characters.
So this sounds like a typical Dark Nage response, where he immediately starts thinking shaggy and not at all efficient, whereas my response is an efficiency response. There is only one viable attachment to play in a regular Baratheon deck, unless you're just building around it.
I agree. It'd be fun to play things like Campfire Lights and stuff, you know, to go search out banner attachments and out House Stark. I'm really excited for the theme. I'm really excited that Nate and Damon are working together, because I think when the two of them get together, we get these really interesting cycles. I know the playtest group this time worked really hard on balance. I think it's going to be great.
Yeah, I think the most provocative cards that have been spoiled are the summer and winter agendas. It's going to be really interesting, because when I look at them, they look wildly imbalanced just on a first glance. Like, summer helps both people, so why are you running summer exactly to give your opponent draw? That seems unusual. Whereas winter is going to be run by someone who's not expecting to have a large hand. Therefore, in theory, it should be a very one-sided agenda.
Yeah, I got that impression too. But I think it's going to be, the payoff cards for summer and winter are really going to determine which one is stronger and why. And the fact that if you're running the summer agenda and someone else, you know, brings out White Raven, they can't steal your season to give you a negative like they could in the past. That's interesting.
Yes, that will be interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing how they flush it out entirely, because right now when I look at it, the existing winter cards versus summer cards also seem to have a pretty large advantage in favor of winter.
Yeah, I totally agree. Right now, I would, you know, if I had to choose one of the two seasons, I'd almost always choose to play winter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting. So I'd like to do a new segment this week called What Have We Learned from a Champion? And so I thought I would share something that I've learned from the reigning world champion, John Bruno. And I've heard him recently talking on a number of podcasts and other places where he says that he builds his plot deck first and then builds the rest of his deck around that plot deck. What do you think about that, Dark Nash?
I hear that said a lot, and I do that somewhat. I normally get a concept for a deck and then put a few plots in, maybe half of them, put some cards in, then go back to the plot. So I kind of do something similar, but I don't build all my plots and then my deck. So I think it's an interesting way. I don't think it's going to work for everyone. I think it's about the creative process for each person, but I think what I take away from it is probably the same thing you do, which is plots are really, really important. In fact, those 7 plots are probably just as important as the rest of the 60-card deck you're going to be using.
Yeah, I feel like playing with Bruno and listening to Bruno has really helped me mature in my plot selection. You know, when I was newer to the game, it would be like, okay, I want a deck that kneels stuff. I'll play the city plots. I want a deck that kills a lot of stuff. Well, then I guess I'll play all high claim plots. And I didn't take seriously enough every single plot and all the different advantages that you can get out of them. Like, for instance, right now my favorite plot is March to the Wall. And I try desperately to fit that into every deck I can, especially with attachments and dupes being as important as they are. You know, you can do something now where if you can time it right, you know your opponent is going to Valor because you have no guys duped. They have their one dude with 5 dupes and 12 attachments, and you time it with March to the Wall, and then they just go, ah!
Yep, it's definitely, I think plots have a lot of power, and it's something I say a lot to new players. You know, I think the plot deck is so, so important that don't mess around with some of the staples until you're really a strong player. Like, all these new players always say to me, I don't think I should put Val in my deck. You know, I don't like resetting my own board. And I say, have you been playing a really long time? And they say, nope, no, I'm pretty new. And I say, you should keep Val in your deck. And to me, if you're new, don't try to do anything extreme or different with your plots at first. Play with the more widely accepted generic plots for that deck type, and then start to do the Bruno plots of, you know, I'm going to use Waste Their Time or something like this in your plot deck. Because I think without that detailed experience, it's very easy to, you know, put 1 or 2 plots in your plot deck that just won't work, and it will totally reduce your chance of winning just from those 2 small changes.
Yeah, I agree. Another piece of advice I would like to give is when you're playing, whenever you go to choose a plot, make a note if you don't like your plot choices. I mean, this is going to happen anyways. Even if you have the perfect plot deck, you're going to get in a spot in a game where you look at your plots and go, ugh, none of these fit. But you need to be keeping track of that to figure out, is this happening too often? So for instance, I built a Baratheon deck that had pretty similar plots to what Bruno was running with his Long Voyage. And I thought, well, this is where I'll start with the deck. But after a few games, I realized for me and my play style, the plot deck wasn't working. And it looks like a perfect plot deck. And I ended up changing 3 plots. And it came from playing game after game where I'd say, I don't like my plots here. If I had this plot here, I'd be happier. And that's what you need to be thinking about as you're playing. Like, is there a particular plot that over and over you keep thinking, if I had this in this spot, I would be in much better shape?
Yeah, or if I just didn't have this other plot because I don't want to play this. I do not want to, you know, do X right now. And then you got to start thinking, maybe I should take that one out.
Yeah, a big plot I would say that's something to be careful of is Art of Seduction. And this is one of those plots that when the meta is not ready for it. It's an amazing plot. You drop it, you almost always catch them on something bad and completely wreck them. However, when the meta is ready for it, like if you're running a rush deck, they, you know, it's pretty clear you're going to run it turn one or two if you're running the kind of deck that seems like it's going to run it. For instance, if you have net decked John Bruno's Long Voyage, your opponent's going to assume you are running it. And it's a very dangerous plot if your opponent knows you have it and knows when you're going to drop it.
Right, because they'll lock you onto something you really don't want to be locked onto.
Definitely. There's a couple players in our meta who pretty much put it in every deck, and I've picked up on this, and whenever we play, I think, okay, does this look like a spot where they want to play Art of Seduction, thinking I'm going to do this? If so, maybe I should do this. And I've busted this person a number of times where they just look at me bewildered, like, oh my goodness, I can't believe I stuck that plot. And I think, yeah, well, you can't run Art of Seduction in every plot deck. It just doesn't work quite like that.
Yeah, it's a surprise card. If you do it every time, it's not a surprise.
Exactly. Are there any other plots like that that you would want to give some specific advice on?
I don't think there's anything that is really common, so that I would be extremely worried about, other than misplaying, like you said, Art of Seduction. And I think misplaying Art of Seduction is only an issue if you're playing against good players. Because I think the newer players won't be thinking, oh, he might have art, he might have X. They tend to think more about their own plot deck and their own cards at a given time. And it's almost like the, you know, the tier two, we'll say, players start to think about their opponent's cards and their opponent's plots. And then it's those tier one players that start to think about their opponent's plots, their plots, not just this turn, but next as well.
Yeah, and that's one of the other dangerous things about a card like Art of Seduction. It becomes such a blowout card when you're playing lesser players. Then you go to a tournament, maybe you win the first round, and then the next two rounds you're playing really good players, and they're blowing you out with your amazing plot.
Yeah, that's one of the risks that, you know, there's a lot of cards that are so good when you're playing inexperienced people where they don't know how to handle them, but as soon as they learn to handle them, the card's nowhere near as good. It's more of that surprise value.
A plot that I think is especially valuable right now in this meta is Forgotten Plans. It just seems like there are so many plots that are doing things after the plot phase that are completely changing the game, like Melisandre's Schemes. And to be able to have that in your plot deck will really help you out. So if you can fit it in a deck, it's one of those plots where when I play a deck, I think to myself, okay, I need to be thinking, is Forgotten Plans a good choice in this plot deck? I don't have it now, but are there enough instances during this game where I think, I know they're going to do this. If I had Forgotten Plans, I'd be in much better shape. It's just one of those cards that you need to be thinking about for every plot deck, I think.
Yeah, I really like that card as well. It's in two of my three regional decks that I already have prepared.
Yeah, and I feel like it's a meta card. Like, there's a lot of metas where Forgotten Plans, it's not really that important, but right now there have just been a number of plots that are popping up that you want to be able to blank.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, that is all for our new segment. What has a champion taught you? In short, Bruno's taught me, think more carefully about my plots. So, until next time. Before we go, I wanted to remind everyone that Kublai Khan is nearly upon us. Memorial Day weekend, May 24th to the 27th. It's essentially an amazing gaming convention for 4 days. Friday will be a Star Wars event. Saturday, a Game of Thrones event. Sunday, a Netrunner event. It's a great way to come out, meet the LA meta at a major fun event. And if for some reason you're not able to afford entry or just want a discounted entry, if you're willing to donate 8 hours of your time to the convention, you can be considered a volunteer and enter the event for free. So come join us, come play with myself, Bruno, come on down to Kublai Khan, and have a great time hanging out with us. Stay classy, Westeros.